This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 catalyzed the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe. This year marks the 25th anniversary of that historic event. And Raleigh's Burning Coal Theater is presenting a world premiere of the Iron Curtain trilogy to commemorate the episode in Western history and in world history. It's a set of plays that chronicles the reshaping of Eastern Europe and explores themes of political negotiation, ethnic conflict, and identity. The trilogy is the costliest and most demanding production the theater has ever staged and represents a unique partnership between a local theater and an internationally renowned playwright. The trilogy opens at Burning Coal tonight. We're going to get a preview right now with playwright David Edgar. He is in town for the opening and returns to the State of Things. David Edgar, good to have you back.
Great to be back.
When you wrote this play, it was not written as a trilogy. You wrote it, the first play, The Shape of the Table, after the fall of the Berlin Wall. What was the impetus? What was going through your mind?
Well, it was a great event. I mean, we've been actually talking to kids in schools around the Triangle, and we've had to remind ourselves that we were the only people in the room who were alive when this happened. But you know, the world was pretty much set throughout my lifetime, and the borders of the world. And I think people, whatever they thought of it and whichever side they were on, felt that the Cold War was how, you know, everything was going to carry on, and that nuclear deterrence had kind of worked, and there hadn't been a war, and there'd been, you know, other small wars, but there hadn't been the big one. And I think we forget how surprising those events were, because the summer of 1989 started with Tiananmen Square, and that seemed to be the model, that if people were going to protest in the streets, and certainly that's what people felt in Eastern Europe, they were going to get mown down. And then when that didn't happen, and when the regimes realized that the Russians were not going to, you know, Gorbachev's Soviet Union wasn't going to come to their aid, and that their own soldiers were very unlikely to be going to fire on demonstrations of their own people. Everything suddenly changed, and you had that extraordinary domino of those six countries moving from communism to forms of democracy, at least, in a short period of time. And it was just very exciting, and I'd been... You know, I'd never been an apostle of Soviet communism or anything like it, but I'm 66 now, so I was 20 in 1968, and I was caught up in the anti-Vietnam protests and student radicalism in the 60s and so on. So you know, I'd been on the left, and you know, in many ways felt I still was. And felt I had to kind of confront it and confront within myself what I felt about this great this great cataclysm, both a kind of sense of enthusiasm for people power, and you know, also thinking about the people who devoted their whole lives to building a form of society that clearly hadn't worked.
So tell us about the premise, because The Shape of the Table was the first play of what is now a trilogy, but at the time...
No, absolutely wasn't conceived that way at all, and they are... they're separate plays. They were written separately. They have been performed by Burning Coal here separately in the past, and it's one of the great things. And I'm so delighted that the company is bringing them together for the first time. They've never been done together. But they don't share any characters, and they're in different countries and so on. But they kind of share a story, which is. My story of my relationship to those events. So, you know, it starts with the actual events of November 89. The second play is set a bit later, and it's about culture and it's about Westerners going into Eastern Europe and perhaps trying to tell them what to do. And it's also about asylum seekers and issues of refugees, which became very important after the wall came down because borders became much more porous. And then the third play is about civil wars and is, you know, based on the Bosnian crisis in particular, but also Kosovo and other wars that blew up as a direct consequence of the wall coming down. So it was me kind of following, and they kind of oscillate, I think, between pessimism and optimism. Mm-hmm. It was my kind of responses to what was happening. And as I say, that it ended up being an accidental trilogy. But then Beethoven didn't start out saying, I'm going to write 9 symphonies.
Well, it is it's a remarkable opus when you think about it. And the fact that it will be staged all 3 for the first time is really stunning and remarkable. Now, here I am back at that word. But Jerome Davis is the artistic director at Raleigh's Burning Coal Theater and the director of all 3 plays. Jerry, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me back.
We talk about this, and we're hinting at David sort of suggests that it's a complicated history, but one that was fairly simply understood. I think your quote in the NNO, which I read over the weekend, was pretty good in terms of how Americans understood the fall of communism and that moment in American and in world history when the wall falls. A fairly simple view of what had happened there. Right.
It's true, and that's becoming more so as this event recedes from memory. Young people today think, this was a really bad idea. Thank God it's passed. Let's move on. Yeah. But there was a continent full of people and 3/4 of a century to suggest that there was something. If not a good idea, certainly it was an idea that many people felt was needed at that time, and so we're exploring that with the idea in mind of allowing young people to understand where that need came from and hopefully avoid it in the future as a result.
The very bad idea was totalitarianism, but some of the principles that underlie equality of wealth distribution and all of those were not embodied at all in capitalism. So it doesn't mean capitalism wins. It means totalitarianism loses. And this is the complicated idea that sort of is behind some of your work, to oversimplify.
I think, and one must absolutely underline the world is better, that those countries are no longer dictatorships. And however, as we now look at what's happening in Eastern Europe, and I think in part that's because Putin wants to revive elements of the old Soviet Empire, but it's also as a result Ukraine is falling apart because there are massive disparities of wealth, because the way that capitalism was introduced was a way that impoverished great tracts of its population, because there is a super rich oligarch class. Which was allowed to develop, and a lot of people in the East did really badly out of that. And I think unnecessarily. I think that could have been introduced in a better way. And so the continue to be choices to be made, choices that have been made, and that you can, I think, legitimately question without saying we want East Germany back.
Well, and without oversimplifying kind of what happened, and that's the point,
is to look at the
kind of the rich possibilities that were opened up and some of them that were foreclosed because we saw this in a very simple dyad. Well, we're joined now by 2 actors who star in 3 of the plays in the trilogy. Brian Lyndon plays an opposition leader in The Shape of the Table. He also plays an American art historian in Pentecost. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Also with us, Tim Davis, who plays a secretary of the Communist Party in The Shape of the Table, and 2 other characters in Pentecost. Hello, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
We should talk a little bit, and maybe, David, I'll ask you to kind of set up The Shape of the Table. We'll get a little flavor of the play right now, but if you can set it up for us, we'd like to hear a scene.
Well, this is at the end of the play, and it's the play is starts with a dissident being brought from prison. Big demonstrations in the country, the regime very frightened. They brought this dissident to try and negotiate to release him in a way that would dampen down the enthusiasm of the demonstrations, and he refuses to do that, and he's in conversation with the General Secretary of the Communist Party, who's very dismissive of him. And at the end of the play, there's a kind of mirror scene when the Communist Party leader is now in jail himself facing trial, and the dissident of scene 1 is about to be appointed president.
So then, in here.
Ah, Mr. President.
Not for at least an hour. The chaps assure me I could still be quite conclusively assassinated.
Or asphyxiated.
What?
Aren't you being blessed or something by that geriatric cardinal?
Yes, I am. And me, a registered asthmatic. Mm. Don't tell me there's a demonstration calling for my overthrow already.
Not yet. Actually, I was looking at myself. In prison, for some reason, mirrors are in short supply, but luckily in dirty glass. Ah, free market, and already we've a shortage of skilled window cleaners. Can't think why.
How's jail?
I'd forgotten how good it was not having to pretend.
Yes. Yes, I used to like that too. And I can't pretend of very long. You're charged with treason, corruption, abuse of authority, and running an unconstitutional organization.
Yes.
We're going to drop the treason.
Thanks.
And corruption insofar as it's not covered by abuse.
Well, ditto.
And the Constitution charge, we're told, won't stand up.
Why not?
Apparently unconstitutional. So that leaves us with abusing the authority of a public official.
Hardly worth it, really.
That's what we thought, too. So all we need is a single-sentence letter on those lines.
Oh.
Well, in those words.
Please, Mr. Pruce, I'm sorry, pardon me.
Well, more or less.
And if I don't?
You go on trial. But it's an academic question, surely.
Tim Davis and Brian Linden playing one of the roles, or playing their roles in The Shape of the Table, one of three plays on stage at Burning Coal Theater. The writer is with us as well, and creator of the plays, David Edgar. David, I think this does point to some of the rich and the power of the ideas at the center of this. Who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Particularly when, in many cases, in those governments, they simply changed party names. It was the same players who took the table, and they were communists, now they're social democrats. You know.
Yes, and that doesn't happen. Actually, it does happen a bit in this play. People end up, you know, run the new government, and as we know from Iraq, the one thing that you don't do when you overthrow a government is completely abolish your civil service and, right. and so on, because you're going to need those people. And I think it does point out, you know, that countries get run, and later on in the scene, Lutz makes a rather good speech about how, for security and all sorts of other reasons, it's very easy for leaders of any sort to end up in closed palaces surrounded by security, and that's certainly not got any less the case in the last 25 years. I think the issue of power. I think what the play tries to demonstrate is that. You know, I think genuinely after the Second World War, there was a general mood across Europe, and it was in Western Europe as well as Eastern Europe for, you know, a radically changed, more equal society, which, you know, manifested itself in Swedish social democracy and the British welfare state and the strength of communist parties in countries like France and Italy. And that was in Eastern Europe too, that it wasn't just that the Soviets took over by force of arms, though the force of arms helped, but that gradually over the years those regimes became about power. And I think that's the great critique of communism, that it becomes, by all power being with the state, it ultimately becomes a matter of all power. And I think the characters who give up power in the play come to understand that and acknowledge that, and that's where it becomes a kind of tragedy.
Jerry Davis, when you direct these plays now, things have changed since these plays were written, and there are references to events that have to be changed. What's the challenge of keeping this relevant in 2014? The themes certainly apply, but some of the details might have to change.
Well, I think you have to make the details very specific so the audience can follow the story. Clearly, and then they can draw their own conclusions. The thing I like about these plays, Frank, though, is not the connection with anything immediate, but I like the language of them. They're beautiful music to my ears. I like listening to the words and the words in the right sequence as David has put them to paper. And there's a musicality about that that's quite interesting that transcends any sort of political message for me. I just like listening to him.
And it's theatrical as well, and this must be the challenge too, David, that you are a master at, and that is taking these deep, powerful intellectual ideas that we should be grappling with and turning them into actual theater, which is not the same thing.
No, well, I hope they're theatrical, and I think they are, and they're made in a strange way. Jerry's had the brilliant idea. They've taken over a a downtown warehouse to be a space just to perform these plays. And there's a different configuration of seating for each of the three plays. So there's elements in common in the set, but there's also elements of difference, which I think is a very brilliant way of doing a trilogy. I'm fascinated with an audience. I've seen all three plays in rehearsal on this trip, but I haven't seen them together through the eyes of an audience, some of which will be in common, some of which won't, because you can see the plays independently, to see the resonances that come out between the three plays. The other resonances, I have to say, are, you know, we switch on. The third play is about whether, if you have a country that's in conflict with a Christian majority and a Muslim minority, whether or not the best way to solve that is to separate the country up and partition it. And, you know, we turn on our computers every morning now, and the de facto borders, both between Ukraine and Russia and between Syria and Iraq and ISIS, are changing, you know, are changing as we speak. They'll be different at the end of this conversation from the beginning. So it's become chillingly, I think, topical in that respect, which will also be really fascinating to kind of listen to audience responses as they see the plays.
The second play is Pentecost. I wonder if we could get a brief a scene from that as well. Could we?
Yes. I think this is a speech about art history. Mm-hmm. after all the about all the politics we've been discussing. But Pentecost is a play in which a fresco is discovered, which has been hidden for hundreds of years, is discovered in an abandoned church in a small and obscure corner of a pretty small and obscure East European country. And the fresco seems to have perspective. It seems to be painted in the style of the Italian Renaissance, but 100 years before that happened. And then the church is invaded by asylum seekers who are seeking sanctuary and seeking to get into Western countries, as happened a great deal in the years after the wall came down. And Leo is who's an American art historian, for various reasons, finds himself required to explain what the painting is about, and this is how he does it.
Okay, it's simple. What this operation does is to make the painting mobile. And sure, right now it's only booked in for one trip, but does anybody really reckon that'd be the end of it? You really think Perusian Deutsche Elektronik, after all this, would transport you to the National Museum, assist you with the heavy lifting, and then slope off home? Come on, it'd be, hey, we got the Big Bang here, you can't keep it to yourself. What say we take it on a little tour? Just think of all that currency. Or even, while you guys are sorting out security, maybe more like an extended loan. Or even, now we come to think of it, wouldn't it be actually much happier and much more accessible to doctors and professors and their ilk in a nice new high-tech California gallery with state-of air conditioning and three golden trowels from Architecture Quarterly? Hey, come on, Ollie, wasn't that the deal? Because that's what happens, Gabriella. That's what paintings are. They are stars of the Hollywood variety with tours and fans and franchise merchandise and entourage. And as such, they are, they must be, universal and eternal. Not allowed to change, most surely not allowed to fade, to crumble or grow old. And of course, they'll never die. But paintings do grow old. Their history is written on their faces, just like it is on ours. And like the history of people, or of peoples, either you acknowledge it and try to understand it, or you say it never happened. Nothing's changed, and you end up doing it again. Hey, do you know there were names here on the wall from when it was a torture chamber, which they scraped away?
Brian Linden from Pentecost, one of the Iron Curtain trilogy on stage, staged by Burning Coal Theater. Jerry Davis, director. We're out of time, but you have a piece of the wall that you'll have that we'll be able to see when we go see the place.
A very, very large piece of the wall that people can touch and take photographs of themselves in front of. So, yes, and it's beautiful. It's a really beautiful piece of that wall.
Incredible project. Thank you for putting it together. Artistic director Jerome Davis, Burning Coal Theater. David Edgar, the playwright behind the Iron Curtain trilogy. Tim Davis. Brian Linden, two of the actors in the Iron Curtain trilogy. Three plays running in rep between tonight with The Shape of the Table on stage 7:30 at Burning Coal Theater. If you want to see the whole schedule, go to our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, state and federal government losing a lot of money. Workers are losing some money as well. An investigative report in the News and Observer. We'll hear more in a moment. Stay tuned.